Hi, I'm Sharon Sneer. You're listening to Grief's Gift, a podcast that explores stories of loss and grief, and how and where to find within these painful times some of life's most beautiful gifts. We all have the freedom to make choices out of the losses we experience. Courageous, creative, collaborative, and conscious choices that so often become the gifts we hold most dear. So welcome to the conversations, meditations, and connections that are grief's gift. Hey everyone, this is Sharon Sneer, and this is Grief's Gift. Today I had the great pleasure of speaking to a young man who has been through more than most of us have been through in an entire lifetime. His name is Makaya Ravel, and he is the founder of the Marie Mambo Makaya Foundation and Peace Promise Consulting in York, Pennsylvania. I met Makaya many, many years ago, not long after he had arrived in the United States of America in York, Pennsylvania. His arrival is a story I'm looking forward to hearing him share. But let me just tell you a little bit about him. He was 11 years old when the Civil War started, and when he turned 16, war touched his family. His father and younger brother were killed, and Makaya was brought to the United States as a refugee and asylum seeker. To list all of the events that occurred in Makaya's life would take far more than just one wonderful conversation. But I want to welcome Makaya and invite him to share his story of loss and grief and enormous success and making an unimaginable difference to the world in which he now lives. Okay, well, it's great to hear your voice. How are you?
Sam, I'm doing well. As I said, come from Philadelphia.
Okay, what were you doing there?
I went to the court, to immigration court, trying to finalize my asylum claim. Yep. And the judge gave us a new date, and the date will be September 14.
September 14 for your asylum?
Yes.
Which means that you can become an American citizen?
That means I'll present a case, and the judge will decide whether to grant me asylum or not. I get asylum and I'll become a permanent resident, and in 5 years, then I can apply for citizenship.
Wow, Makaya, how many years have you lived in America?
20 years in December.
And it's taken 20 years for you to get this case, this court case up?
Yes.
That's just incredible. I mean, yeah. I have no words. Really, no words to describe how that process can take so long. It's just outrageous. Yeah. Listen, it is such a joy to speak to you, Makaya. It really is. And I've done a little tiny introduction, but basically I would love to hear your story, because your story took you from really one of the darkest times I could imagine in a child's life through to the United States of America, where more difficulties happened until you met Elizabeth and Alvin. So can we go back a little bit to the beginning and share your story? Because I know that you've achieved so much, and I don't want to miss that either, but I just want to create a foundation from where you started.
Yes. I was born and raised in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Back then, when I was born in 1986, it was called Zaire. It was being led by Mobutu. His name is very long. Yeah, so Mobutu Kuku Wendo Sese Seko Wazabanga. So, my mom, Mary Mambu Magaya, she was a teenager when she had me. She grew up a Catholic. At that time, being pregnant with no husband, unmarried, was a little bit of shame in the community and to her family. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather, which I never met, decided that Mary should have an abortion. And since he knew that Mary was against that anyway.
What did he suggest? I didn't hear you. Sorry. What did your grandfather suggest?
My grandfather suggested that Mary should have an abortion.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Mary was against that, and something that he did with Mary's friend, some kind of pill, Mary's best friend gave to Mary. It turns out that the pill was to kind of abort the baby. And Mary got sick, and she went to the doctor, and the doctor was explaining that the pill she took was bad for the baby.
Okay.
And Mary got really upset after that, and she fled home. She went, I think, almost 200 miles away in a small, remote village called Nkamba. Nkamba was, and it still is, kind of a refugee place, religious, you know, a refuge place for the people. So this religious village accept Mary, and Mary, they allowed Mary to stay in this place.
And have the baby.
Until she had the baby, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm. After that, the leader of this organization, one of his son, came to Mary, and then told Mary that, you know, the child is a gift from God, the child is a blessing, therefore, Mary should name a baby after the founder of this organization, of this religious organization. So Mary ended up naming me Jangana Dialungana Salomo. But as I grew older, she dropped Salomo because the name was getting way too long for even for Congolese.
Okay. Right.
So, she left out Kiangana Dialungana, in short.
Okay.
So, but the place is called Nkamba. Nkamba is they consider it to be as a holy place in the western part of Congo. It is in the middle of nowhere, but I was born in that temple.
And how long did you live there?
When I was born, but according to Mary, she said that they took me away from her for a few months. So she didn't even see me for a few months. And later on, I was returned to her. And but we stayed there almost 2 years, I think, she said.
And Micaiah, why were you taken away from your mother for a few months?
That's one of the mystery I have never got an answer to from Mary.
I see.
Mary told me why I was taken away from her.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where you were taken?
I don't know. Okay. I just vaguely remember growing up, but there were a lot of people around me. A lot of, mostly women, you know, were cheering me up, were helping Mary with me, were taking me to school, feeding me. There was just a lot of community around me, you know, growing up.
Mm-hmm. And then your mother eventually got married, didn't she?
Mary and my dad, later on, they got reunited again, and they both end up going to college, but they keep on having the children. They live together. We all live together as a family. I don't remember them getting married. I don't think they were married. I mean, if they, it must have been in a secret.
How many children did they have, including you?
Yeah, all together we were five.
Five children.
Five boys. Yes.
Five boys. And so if we can jump forward a little bit, I know that you had some personal problems with your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And can you tell me what happened before you had to quickly leave your village and eventually the Congo? What happened?
Because of the name I was carrying, because for the family name is Makaya, but I was carrying a different name, a religious name, and my father started creating, started kind of resenting that name as we progress in life. And it became a little bit, you know, I became the black sheep of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and dad were fighting a lot because of me.
Mm.
And I started building a little bit of resentment of my father from an early age, because some of the things that used to happen was, for example, on my birthday, I used to celebrate my birthday just me and Mary. But on my brother's birthday, we celebrate as a family.
Uh-huh.
So clearly, dad had nothing to do with me. But love I received from Mary and the support was enough for me to carry on.
He didn't believe that you were actually his son.
That was the rumor that but he was believing it, because for the idea being born in this temple and having a different name and being taken away as a baby, so there was enough evidence for him to create a, you know, doubt of me being his biological son.
Mm, but of course you were. And then what happened? What happened that later?
Later on, it just created a little bit, toxic environment at home. Nothing happened to me physically, but it was just kind of a passive hatred, a little bit conflict between me and dad. But they both were working for the government. And when a war, civil war, broke down in the Congo, Mobutu was overthrown by Kabila, Laurent Kabila. And Laurent Kabila launched what we call the witch hunt against the people who were working with the previous administration.
All right.
And one night, I was 16 years old. I was learning how to drive, because even though in the mix of a war, in the mix of a civil war, life was still moving forward for some people. I was learning how to drive, and we got into an accident with the police one night.
Mm-hmm.
And in a retaliation, when they went to my house shooting, and when they struck one of my brother, my youngest brother, he was 8 years old when he got struck by a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fled running because the people who saw what happened, where they were encouraging me and my instructor to run away. So because we lived near the water, we lived near the river, the Congo River, and but the safest place for me to go at that time was on a ship, where to hide down for a little bit until I'll come back home. And but the ship ended up sailing, which is I didn't know. I woke up, found myself in the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh my God.
My leg and the crew members of the ship found me, and they started treating me with my injuries on my legs.
Okay. So you were found by the crew members. You had already been injured. How did you get injured?
I was falling down when I was running away from it. And I didn't even know that I have cut my leg. And I still have that long scar on my leg until today. So I didn't know that I was bleeding even. I didn't even know I injured myself. I was in a state of panic and, run to find a safe place so I can, hide down for a little bit.
And how were you treated on the ship?
But they put a lot of medicine but they kind of clean up all the blood and put a bandage around my leg.
Did anybody speak to you? Could you understand? Could they understand you?
The captain of ship, I remember, was speaking a little bit of French. Not much, but very little. Enough, but to kind of observe and understand what was happening and what I was trying to communicate.
Yeah. Continue. Yeah. And the captain, I understand, was very kind to you.
Yeah, but the captain was very protective. And I think he told me where he was from, Israel.
Yes. You know how important that is for me, having a strong link through my husband and children with Israel. So it's beautiful that the captain was from Israel.
Yes. He was very protective of me because he knew what was happening in the Congo, but we were in the middle of civil war, and things were very bad in the Congo at the time. And he protected me throughout my journey from Matadi. We went to Brazil. The Brazilian government wanted to deport me to Congo, and he didn't like that. For some reason, I found myself back on a ship, and we went to Argentina. Similar thing happened in Argentina. I went back to the ship again, and then final stop, we came to the United States.
And in the United States, you were taken to a detention center?
In the United States, yes. I was handed over to the immigration agent, and taken in prison for one night. And the next day, this was in New Orleans, in the southern state, and we flew to New York City, and after that, we took bus, we drove to Pennsylvania, in Reading, Pennsylvania.
I can't imagine how a 16-year-old can even comprehend all of these different things that are happening to you. You must have been terrified.
At that time, what was keeping me motivated and being hopeful that I will talk to my mom again. So the idea that, you know, me and her, we have a conversation about what's going on was enough to keep me hopeful.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, keep my imagination, my thought process keep moving forward. A lot of bad things happened. I was treated horribly, both, you know, in the hands of by the immigration agent, and even the place where we were living at the shelter, where they were keeping an accompanied minor immigrant, those minors were coming from all over the world. Their treatment was not great. So as part of all that, I was hopeful that, you know, if I talk to my mom, or when I talk to my mom, you know, everything will be okay.
Wow. And were you allowed to contact your mother? You phoned her?
About a month and a half later, I was able, my lawyers went to locate my mom, and but we talked, and I told her everything that was happening, the maltreatment we were receiving in this facility. And I remember that she just listened very quietly, and she said to me that the United States is a constitutional cosmos. What I need to do, I have to ask to my a social worker to find me the U.S. Constitution in French so I can read that and I can understand, you know, but the basic laws of the United States, and I will determine how I'd like to be treated because I was protected by the United States Constitution.
Wow, so your mother recommended that to you so that you could look after yourself.
Yes.
That's just incredible. And how long were you in those facilities where the treatment was so abhorrent? How long were you there?
Almost a year.
Wow. Wow. And then what happened, Micaiah?
And I request the U.S. Constitution, and I start reading it. And it was like a light bulb where went on in my brain. And I start, I became vocal about the treatment we were having in the facility. And I started advocating for our freedom. One of the way I was able to do that was I asked my social worker which civil society organization in the United States that's working for human rights that we could contact so I could tell them what is truly going on in this place. We are not terrorists, we are not criminals, we are refugees and asylum seekers, but we have been treated like a terrorist.
And so, and a child. You were still a child.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I was a 16.
Yes.
And my social worker suggested an Amnesty International. So I asked her to make a contact with the Amnesty International, which she did. And Amnesty International got involved, and they interviewed me. And I was able to talk about everything that was happening in this place, and they did an 85-page report about this facility, and it was submitted at the George Bush administration, and where they end up closing a place for unaccompanied minor.
The beginning of your social change, because you are a social change individual, and that was the beginning of you stepping forward into the purpose of your life, really, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. It began by Mary recommending the Constitution, and then me focusing on that and advocating. So it was a very, it was a paradigm shift in my life and the lives of others who were living there. And it was a lot of children from all over the world.
Absolutely.
And those who had a family here in the U.S., they were sent to their family. And those of us, like myself, who didn't have any contact here in the United States, we were sent to the foster care system.
And how was that for you?
The foster care system, every time I discuss about this publicly, I always, make sure that I'm mindful of what I'm saying. My experience at the foster care system was horrible.
It's hard for me to hear that your experience in the foster care system was horrible, and I know you're going to describe a little of that. But at this point, we're going to take a break and come back to Micaiah Revelle in the next 2 weeks to hear the rest of his incredible story. So until then, this is Sharon Sneer from Grief's Gift, looking forward to returning to you in the not-too-distant future.